Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale here in the KRCB studios with my co-host Michaela Kennan and engineer Mary Mark Campagna. We have an exciting show in store for you tonight. First, we'll chat with Emilio Gonzalez-Yanis, the author of Cigar City Stories, Tales of Old Ybor City, a collection of stories and poems about growing up gay in a Florida town of yesteryear where most of the residents worked in the city rolling factories. Later, we'll have a conversation with Morning Song from Mavericks, Santa Rosa, a club which hosts one of Sonoma County's hottest LGBT nights. First, we'll welcome our first guest right after Greg Moralia and Outbeat Radio News.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, July 21st, 2013. Gay marriage is to become legal in England and Wales after a lower court of the British Parliament approved the final changes this last Tuesday to a law that had Prime Minister David Cameron's backing but split his ruling Conservative Party. The law had the support of both Labour and Liberal Democrats, Britain's two other main political parties, but damaged Cameron's standing within his own party, with many of his own lawmakers criticizing him for being too liberal. After 2 hours of debate, the House of Commons passed the bill, and Queen Elizabeth gave her blessing. Same-sex marriage is now legal in England. And back here in the States, Prop 8 proponents tried once again to stop same-sex weddings in California, this time by filing a motion with the California Supreme Court asking for an immediate halt to the weddings, based on the belief that the federal court decisions rendered by Judge Vaughn Walker only applied to the two couples who filed the original suit. The California Supreme Court unanimously denied this motion last Monday. They did, however, agree to consider the statewide application of the federal decision. But no one other than the Prop 8 supporters believe the court will interfere with the federal court's injunction against Proposition 8.
Oh, her eyes make the stars look like they're not shining. Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. She's so beautiful, and I tell her every day.
And fans continue to mourn the death of 31-year-old Corey Monteith, star of the TV series Glee, as the coroner in Vancouver released a report documenting the cause of death as a heroin and alcohol overdose. Monteith will be remembered as a humble, gracious, and successful actor who was a huge ally for the LGBT community, particularly LGBT youth.
When I see your face, there's not a thing that I would change. You're amazing, just the way you are.
A gay New Mexico teen reportedly committed suicide after being subjected to intense bullying from his classmates. 17-year-old Carlos Vigil posted a note on Twitter before he decided to take his own life. The New York Daily News reports that Vigil, who would have been a senior at Albuquerque Valley's high school this fall, was taken off life support at the University of New Mexico on July 16th. And here locally, the mother of a Sonoma Valley teen beaten, robbed, and assailed with anti-gay slurs earlier this year struggled for composure at a sentencing hearing in juvenile court this last Thursday as one of the attackers read her letter of apology. Kristen Land said, "If he does what he says he's going to do, he'll be on the right track. If he doesn't, he'll be right back on the streets doing what he's always been doing." Land said the 17-year-old gang member, whose name has not been disclosed because he is a minor, earlier pleaded guilty to three charges. He was ordered Thursday to complete a program of counseling, education, and vocational training at the Sonoma County probation camp. The teen was one of several attackers who jumped and robbed Land's gay 18-year-old son the night of March 29th at El Verano School. Sonoma County Sheriff deputies initially took no report of the incident, but command officers later apologized and said the assault and robbery should have been investigated from the outset as a hate crime. The second suspect arrested and charged in connection with the attack, Francisco Cerna, 19 years old, faces six charges. His trial is scheduled to begin on August 9th. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, July 22nd at 7 p.m., the parents of Transgender Youth Support Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, July 23rd at 7:30 p.m., the trans group will meet at the Positive Images Center. On Thursday, July 25th at 7 p.m., the Men for Men support group will gather at the Marin AIDS Project, 910 Irwin Street in San Rafael. And if you're a same-sex couple looking for a unique way to get married, we'd love to marry you on one of our upcoming radio shows. We'll provide an officiant, a champagne toast, and a photographer, all free of charge. And of course, you'll get a recording of the entire ceremony. If you'd like to sign up, just go to our website at outbeatnews.com. And if you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, tell us about it by going to that same website, outbeatnews.com. And be sure to follow us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Kennan.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Emilio Gonzalez Llanos was born and raised in Ybor City, Florida. He began writing fiction and poetry at age 60. In 1995, he produced a four-part PBS television series, Qigong for Health. His stories and poems have appeared in various publications. Emilio happens to live right here in Santa Rosa. Emilio, welcome to Outbeat Radio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations on your beautifully written book.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed it. The stories tackle many issues involving immigrant life in America, the clash of politics and culture, and discovering one's sexuality. Talk about capturing your memories in the form of both short stories and poems.
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, in a community of Cuban, Italian, and Spanish people. You know, the Catholic Church was big there too. You know, and being a gay person growing up there, you could not be out, at least not in the 40s and 50s. You know, so, but I had those feelings, you know, from the time I was 5 years old, and I wrote about them, and I wrote poems about it, you know. And so what I did for this book, you know, is that I collected stories that are based on memories of my growing up there. It's not a memoir. It's fiction. I invented some of those characters. I also invented some of those situations. But they're pretty much based on my family, you know, and growing up there. And my feelings around my male boyfriends, you know, and getting to know each other and you know, sexual exploration with my friends. And all that took place. And actually, it was a lot of fun.
Well, let me just give you a quick synopsis here. So Cigar City Stories is narrated by a boy who bears witness to some extraordinary events in his community. What was your experience blending your family's Cuban culture with life in America, facing big changes in your hometown, and then finally moving on and going on with your life?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, Ybor City was still producing a lot of cigars, all right, and there was work, and people had money, and people were able to, you know, patronize the businesses there. But, you know, it's a community that was based on principles that they brought from Cuba and Spain and Italy. You know, so, like, we had benevolent societies that provided health care from birth to grave for 25 cents a week, right? That's doctor and dentist and everything else, you know. You know, there were social clubs. Each nationality actually had a social club, like the Cuban club, the Centro Español for the Spanish people, and the Italian club for the Italian people, you know. And these clubs were three or four stories high with ballrooms and cantinas and movie theaters, you know. And I remember they're still there. The buildings are still there. And the Centro Español today is a multiplex, you know. But the building is still there. So the community was pretty self-sufficient, and it was outside of the culture of Florida.
Which
was a southern state, strictly segregated racially, right? And that was a problem because we had a lot of black Cubans who came to work in Ybor City, you know. And at first, it was okay because they were making money. They were bringing money to the city, you know. And the city let Ybor City get away with a lot of stuff, you know. And And so for many years, you know, the black people were allowed to work side by side with white people, eat in restaurants with white people, you know, ride the same public conveniences and so forth. And but then when the Tampa annexed Ybor City, made it part of Tampa, you know, then the roles changed and the black people were kind of had to move out. Had to move out, you know. That's kind of a sad story. That's my next book.
Oh, wow.
Wow, nice little preview.
So you do a great job capturing those coming-of-age stories and coming-out stories. You know, when one sort of first realizes that he or she is different and that there are others like him, tell us about your realizing you were gay in those days before Stonewall.
Well, you know, it was like I was very lucky in a way because my sister was a lesbian. Hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Although we never spoke about it, she and I, until we were in our 20s. All right. But I knew she was a lesbian and she knew, you know, that I was a faggot. You know? And there was no secret about it, you know. And if I remember, even at 5 years old, you know, that what attracted me was our neighbor boy, you know, Philip Lopez. I hope he's listening. And that I knew what it was I wanted to do with him. And no one had to teach me that.
Mm. Right.
And this was at a very early age.
Very early age, you know. And of course, I think my mother always knew. You know, my father, he was so absent most of the time, you know. And I think my father, it would have been okay, you know, that he was that kind of a man, you know. And my friends, I really had no gay friends.
Did you know about gay friends?
Yeah, there were some gay people there, but they were, you know, persecuted and beat up and followed. And, you know, it was not a happy thing for those. And you did not want to identify with a gay person. You know, when I was growing up, you had to live a double life. And I started doing that early on in high school. Mm. I think what I'm going to read tonight talks about that, you know, talks about how I would go out with a girl on a date and then I'd end up at this gay man's house for the rest of the evening, you know.
Well, why don't you go ahead and read that poem for us?
Oh, all right. You want me to read this? I'll start it.
Sure.
You know, and this book is not a memoir, so it's not autobiographical, but this piece here is. This piece here is very close to being autobiographical, and it's called School Days. And it covers a period of elementary school, junior high school, and high school, you know, and how my feelings changed in that time. I didn't realize this was a coming out story until I finished it. And then I said, hey, this is a coming out story, you know. So here we go. School Days, 1943 to 1956. I remember skipping barefoot on hot sands, tree shade to tree shade, on the first day of school at Orange Grove Elementary. I remember marching down stone hallways in the boys' line, past arched portals opening into a wide lawn with a flagpole at the center. Excuse me. I remember plowing sandy soil outside our classroom window to plant a victory garden. I remember performing in a white sequined outfit for the silver and white ballet at the May Festival. I remember riding a train for the first time on a field trip to the Ringling Brothers Circus in Sarasota. A giraffe threw up all over me. I remember stealing a watermelon from Mr. Ames' farm. My buddies and I plugged the hot, moist fruit and took turns humping it. I remember joining the marching band in the seventh grade to avoid taking showers with the other boys. I played French horn. I remember writing love poems to Marilyn Monroe in the ninth grade. The teacher confiscated them. I remember scoring in the top tier of achievement tests, though my grades languished in the cellar. I never took a book home. I remember dancing every tune with a different girl at teen dances. The other boys couldn't dance. I remember editing Jefferson High's first cheesecake calendar with glossy photos of high school girls in beach attire and cheerleader uniforms. I wrote a poem for each month. I remember dating homecoming queens in high school while secretly lusting after the long-legged players on the basketball team. I remember necking with my high school sweetheart on a date and then making out with an older gay man after midnight in the next town. I remember enrolling at the University of Tampa, but never going to classes, then dropping out and joining the Navy. And I remember falling in love with my bunkmate in a barracks filled with nude and semi-nude 18-year-olds. I could no longer deny my feelings for other men.
There we go. Nice. Nice, Emilio. Thank you. You started writing at the age of 60.
Well, I started writing fiction at that time, yeah. You know, but I've been, you know, writing poetry since I was very young, mm-hmm. and I kept journals for 40 years, so I've been doing a lot of writing. But I stopped work, and I decided to go back to school, and I went back to Santa Rosa JC. Mm-hmm. And took 5 semesters of creative writing, you know, and that was very, very helpful because, like every art, you know, there are shortcuts, you know, and there are skills that you can pick up in school and makes your artwork a lot better.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's the instructor there?
The teacher that I had most often was Meg Ellingson. Mm-hmm. She called herself Peg Ellingson at that time, and I don't know if she's listening, but if you are, Peg, thank you.
Wow, there you go.
Did you know from an early age that you wanted to be a writer? Or
yes, you know... I worked when I was in high school. After school, I worked at a newspaper, and I was like the character in Superman, you know, like worked in the newsroom, and I delivered the mail, you know, Johnny Olson,
mm-hmm.
I think it was his
Jimmy.
Name. Yeah, and that's what I did, you know, and I was writing at the time, and I met all these. Reporters, you know, were really a bunch of alcoholics.
Low-paid,
and overworked. Well, you know, right. I'd like to be like them.
Has a certain appeal.
Yes.
So did you study journalism? So did you continue your education in school? You say.
Oh, yes, I did. You know, I went to the Navy because I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I was... You know, everything in Ybor City was going out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, the factories had automated and laid off a lot of people. There was no business, and people moved away. And I was dating a girl, but I was in love with her brother. Mm-hmm. You know, and that didn't work. You know, and I said, yeah, I got to get out of here. So it was a good way out. Mm-hmm. I don't regret for a minute, you know, going into the military. I had a wonderful time, and that's my next book. I'm putting it together right now.
It is.
My Navy stories, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know if I can find a publisher for this material, but...
Probably more easily now than
yes.
10 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was Don't Ask, Don't Tell was the same then.
Right, right.
It was the same then, you know, only it wasn't official. Mm-hmm. And then they made it official.
Right.
But you couldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you could be gay. Just don't push it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be discreet, you know, and don't push it. And it was all right, you know. So, you know, I was surrounded by good-looking guys
mm-hmm.
all the time.
And a number of them you think were gay.
Oh,
a
yeah.
A fair number.
Oh, yeah. I met some that we, you know, we came out to each other.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
We came out to each other. In Norfolk, they used to say, are you a friend of Dorothy's?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the keyword. Right. And, you know, the word gay was a code word way back then.
Right.
It was not
right.
in the public. It was not in the press.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gay was something that we used among ourselves only.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that was it. You know, so yeah, in the Navy there were gay people, you know, mm-hmm. and then I was on Malta, you know, and I was happy to hear that you've been there. He described Malta perfectly to me, you know. And I was in Malta for a year, and I was in Sicily for a year.
Wow.
And so I really had a wonderful time and you know, a lot of adventures. So,
right. So how long in the Navy?
4 years.
Four, okay.
4 years,
good
yeah.
Stint. And yeah. then you moved here to California?
Well, yeah, I came out here to go to school. And that was, I finished my school out here, and I got my bachelor's at UCLA in business. You know, very practical, you know. I could get a job.
Right.
You know, and then I went back and I got my MBA at USC, you know. And I worked mostly, my professional life was in nonprofits. Charitable organizations. Mm-hmm. You know, my last job was at Catholic Charities of San Francisco, where I was the chief financial officer.
Yeah.
There, you know. You know, but the other part of my life is that I teach Tai Chi and Qigong classes, mm-hmm. and I've done that for many, 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 many years, you know.
And how did you get into that?
Well, you know, I met this guy, this really cute guy.
There's a narrative thread.
In one of my accounting classes, he had a motorcycle. And
and what year was this?
Oh, my. This was like 68 or 69, something like that, in Los Angeles.
Ah.
And we were flying down the freeway in these motorcycles with him. And he was doing Kung Fu, which no one had ever heard of at the time. And he introduced me to Tai Chi, and I liked it right away. And I had time to practice because I was unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still doing it, and I still see the same teacher 40 years later. He comes to San Francisco once a year and teaches, and I go see him. And I started teaching when I came back to San Francisco in 75, and taught classes for people with HIV and AIDS, which became this video that this talk about in the book here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, today I teach classes in Sonoma County. I moved to Occidental and I taught Qigong at St. Philip's Church there for 17 years now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it's very well-attended class. People come from all over West County and, you know, Guerneville and Forestville and Sebastopol. And then I moved to Santa Rosa 3 years ago and started a class in Juilliard Park on Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock for 1 hour. It's $5 a class.
Yeah.
You know, beginners are always welcome.
At all levels, as they say.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. So I love doing that. I love teaching the class, yes.
So talk about producing the PBS series in 1995.
Oh, yes. Well, okay, fine. You know, this was a time when the medications for HIV were not yet available. You know, and I've been HIV positive since my partner died in 1986. That's been 40 years, 35 years, mm-hmm. something like that. And at that time, there was no cure. There was no hope, you know. And I decided that I would start this class for people with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of them could not make it to the class, you know, because they were too ill to get on the Muni and come downtown. And I was right downtown, you know. So we decided we'll make a video for these folks who are homebound or for people who live in other parts of the country where this is not available. You know, and I was very lucky that one of my Tai Chi students was a producer at Channel 9 in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and he became the producer of this show, and we got the director from Channel 9, everybody, the whole staff, and they worked for peanuts. We just barely paid them, you know, to get it done. But it got on PBS, and it was a four-part series, four classes, 25 minutes each.
Mm.
And it played all over the country, and it's still playing.
Mm-hmm.
This was in 1995, and I still get emails from people that say, we saw your show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still playing around the country somewhere. So
is it available in DVD?
It is. It is available on DVD. And I think right now I'm the only one who has these DVDs.
Okay. But if you go to the pbs.org site,
yes,
you can
it's there.
Look it up there.
Yeah, you can look at it there. You can look at it there. Or if you live in Santa Rosa, you can get the DVD from Kaiser.
Oh.
For free. You don't have to be a member.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So how would one go about doing that?
Go to the education section at Kaiser.
At Kaiser. Yeah. Wow. Wow. So talk about some of the benefits of Qigong for HIV positive folks.
Well, you know, one of the first things I noticed in the epidemic, you know, that the people who were dying first, you know, were the drama queens. Mm-hmm. The people who were really stressed out in their life, doing a lot of drugs and alcohol and things like that.
Not taking care of themselves.
And, you know, Qigong has a way of calming you down, helping you with your breathing, you know, stimulating your internal organs. And in Chinese medicine, which Qigong is one of the main components of traditional Chinese medicine, the internal organs, you know, is where a lot of our emotions are based, is where a lot of our feelings come from. Mm-hmm. I recently read an article about we have a second brain, and that brain is in your belly. Mm-hmm. And when you have a gut feeling, you should listen. You know, because that's where your other brain is. It's down there.
Does that tie in with the chakra centers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Yeah. So the benefits of Qigong, you know, are, you know, I've asked students this, you know, what are you getting out of this class? And they say, well, it gets me out of the house. It gets me out of the house and gets down here. And for, you know, for some people that are ill, like in my Occidental class, I had a lot of women with cancer. You know, undergoing chemo and radiation and so forth. So they couldn't always come to class, you know. So the class has always been drop-in. Mm-hmm. Get here when you can, you know, and do what you can. Mm-hmm. And don't push yourself.
It's very low impact, correct?
Yes. You stand in one posture most of the time and make circular movements and breathing and relaxation and and there's very little talking. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much silent. I just give you instructions, and that's it. You know, I get some. You know, I get a lot of feedback from the students that it really, really helps them, mm-hmm. With stress in their life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Do you bring some of those concepts to your writing? Because writing can be stressful for a lot of people.
I don't bring them there, but they surface there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They come up there, you know. It's like, you know, you can't do Tai Chi for 40 years without having it in your DNA. Mm. Becomes part of your DNA, you know. And you do everything based on your Tai Chi, you know. Everything. I cook a lot. I see myself in the kitchen. I'm doing Tai Chi, you know, slicing onions or whatever, you know. So, yeah, it does. And in my writing, I guess it was Peg Ellingson who was my first teacher here who noticed that there was a rhythm in my writing that the other students didn't have, you know, and it had something to do, you know, with this yin and yang and up and down and in and out. And in this piece I read today, you know, I went through there and marked that, you know, that rhythm, you know, because it's there, but I didn't plan it.
Right. And it's even in your short stories.
Oh, yeah, the stories. The
poems sort of obviously have a rhythm, but your short stories.
But in the stories, too. In the stories, too, you find that rhythm, you know. And that rhythm is the Tai Chi rhythm.
Mm-hmm. That is your rhythm.
Yeah, it's my rhythm. It's me. Mm. It's me, yeah.
Would you say you practice your writing and in the same way that you practice your Tai Chi, that...
Well, you know, Tai Chi is one of the tools that I use when I'm writing because, you know, the best lines and the best ideas come up from the unconscious. And when you're doing Tai Chi, a lot of times, you know, you can let go of what's what's happening here, you know, and go into your unconscious. And and that's where I get a lot of ideas. Sometimes I'll get the line that I was looking for that just fits this paragraph, you know. I stop the Tai Chi and run to the car and get my notebook and write it down.
Wow.
Now I keep the notebook under a tree nearby, you know, because I know that the Tai Chi is when those solutions come up. And those solutions come up, you know, because you're allowing the unconscious to surface. It's like writing first thing in the morning is good.
Right.
Because you're still not, you know, worried about the laundry and all the other things that are going to happen in your life, you know. So, yeah, it's very good. Tai Chi is one of my tools for writing.
For writing.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So what are you working on now?
Well, right now I'm revising and rewriting because writing is really about rewriting, you know.
Endlessly.
And I've unearthed all these stories that I wrote about the Navy, my time in the Navy. And I discovered a character that was very real to me, a lover. And I discovered I had 8 or 9 of his letters. And they're really hot letters. And he was stationed in Guam and places like that, and he would write me when he was horny. You know, so it was that kind of thing. But I kept it all, and I kept photos that he sent me too. I'm not sure if that's going to be part of my collection or not. This might be a separate project because it's grown beyond me, you know. And since I keep a journal, I also incorporated into that piece some of my writings about the time when I met this guy and what it was about, you know. So that's probably going to be a different story. But the collection I'm working on is about Malta. I'll have a story about Malta in there.
Excellent.
You know, and the Key West was another place I was stationed. You know? And like I said, you know, if you were discreet, you could have a wonderful time.
Well, we're going to look forward to that.
Really? Certainly. How may people learn more about everything that's going on in your life and
well, if
get
you're
a hold of
if
your book?
You're interested in buying this book, you know, it's $9.95, and it's on sale here in Santa Rosa at Copperfields Bookstore in Montgomery Village, you know, and they have copies there available. Or it's on all the online bookstores, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and the publisher iUniverse also is selling it. And you can get an ebook from Google for $3, I think.
Wow.
And I did that, and I liked it. I liked the
That was your first ebook.
Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I liked the illustrations and reading it on there. I liked that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. And give us your website if people want to learn more about you.
If you want to learn more about me,
your website address.
Oh, the website is Emilio at CigarCityStories.com.
There you go. Beautiful. Now, we usually play some music during our break, and you brought some Cuban music for us, some music that you said was popular when you were growing up. Tell us about this artist.
Yes, this artist is Benny More, and he was an Afro-Cuban person. He was probably the most popular Cuban singer ever. Right. In the 40s and 50s, he traveled all over Latin America. His band played at the Academy Awards in 1955, and he was kind of like the Nat King Cole of Latin America, right?
Excellent.
And he recorded all the popular songs of that time.
What would you like us to play?
As what?
Which track would you like us to play?
I think one is fine.
Great, great. Emilio, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Such a pleasure.
Well,
it's been.
Thank you for having me on. I've really enjoyed this, you know. Thank you.
Sure. Come back with the next book.
I'll be here.
Excellent.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
dolienta. Íbamos a la molienda. De pronto yo vi, cerquita de ahí vi, había una culebra mirando pa' mí. Yo grité, la gente sale huyendo, mirando yo nada más. De pronto empezaron todito a gritar.
Oye, José, oye, José, ven, saca, cuida con la culebra que muerde los pies.
Si me muerde los pies, voy a tenerla que matar. Si me muerde los pies, yo no puedo caminar. Echa pa' allá,
ven, saca, cuida con la culebra que muerde los pies.
Si me muerde los pies, yo la quiero apurruñar. Si me muerde los pies, yo no puedo trabajar. Echa pa' allá,
ven, saca, cuida con la culebra que muerde los pies.
Outbeat Collage. We're here in the KRCB studios with my co-host Gary Carnevale. I'm Michaela Kennan. We've got Mary Moore Campagna on the engineering boards. And our next guest is going to bring us some wonderful information about a fantastic new venue that we have here in Santa Rosa. Mavericks is one of Santa Rosa's newest nightlife and club venues. It does offer a full line of events and activities all the way from karaoke to country line dancing. It features a full restaurant and bar, performance stage and dance floor, live music, DJ-driven excitement, all in the name of a good time, and of special interest to our community, of course, every Tuesday has been designated LGBT night. We're going to hear more about that and Mavericks from our next guest, Sinke Morningsong. Morningsong, as the name she is known by, is also the talent buyer, handling a lot of the promotion and marketing for Mavericks. We're super excited to have her with us tonight. Morningsong, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you for having me, Michaela.
It's great pleasure to meet you finally. I'm excited. I heard about Mavericks just from a little flyer that ended up on my front porch. So I was real glad to not only see the venue, but to see that there was an LGBT night connected with that. And of all things, right near Windsor and, you know, North Santa Rosa. So it's a surprised little venue. Give us a sense of the vibe at Mornings.
You'll
I'm
get
fascinated.
It. It's okay.
I will know. I'm fascinated by your name. The sense of the vibe at Mavericks, though, when one walks in the door, what is the excitement, the energy one feels?
Well, you know, we're a very unique club, and one of the things that's really great about us is that the vibe changes depending on what kind of event we're doing. You know, if you just come in for dinner, you're going to have a very different feeling than if you come in for a hip-hop show or a reggae show or LGBT night. It's if you come in earlier, it's going to be more low-key and more family-friendly, and if you come in later, it's going to look more like a nightclub and techno and all of the lights and whistles.
Uh-huh. And what was the inspiration behind Mavericks?
Well, my daughter had always wanted to, I'm also the owner's mother, and she had always wanted to own a bar for as long as I can remember. She's talked about it. And when she decided to really go for it, she originally bought Kodiak Jack's down in Petaluma. But her vision was bigger than just having a country western bar, but she knew that it was so established down there that it would be really difficult for her to bring in anything new. So she looked around and finally found this venue. Some people used to know it as Funky Monkey up by the airport. And her staff worked for a couple of months, 7 days a week, 18-hour days, really refinishing the whole inside and creating this beautiful new restaurant and bar that was really created through their sweat. Uh-huh. It was definitely sweat equity.
Wow. And then when did the doors officially open?
Last August. This is our anniversary month. And we're really excited. In the next week or so, we're going to be announcing some new events and a few changes. You know, over the year, we've learned some new things, and so we're going to be making some shifts. One of the events that's going to be fun this month is Wonder Bread 5 is coming back, and that was really a great show. Mm-hmm. And so we're just making some new additions.
Mm-hmm. And my guess is that for those who once knew it as Funky Monkey, they wouldn't certainly recognize it.
No, everything from the roof to the floor has changed. It would not be recognizable at all.
Wow, that's great. That's neat. There seems to be kind of a country western theme, given the name Mavericks.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that she was a little bit, holding on to, because she really likes the country western theme, but she doesn't want to just be locked into that. So on Thursdays and Saturdays, we do country western, and Thursdays she has couples dance lessons beginning at 6, and then open dancing, and then line dance lessons beginning at 9 on both Thursday and Saturday with DJ, and both are 18 and over, so everybody can come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Talk about this fascination with country line dancing. It seems to be popular. People love it once they get into it.
I think that there's some part of us that it's a kind of a primitive thing. We've been line dancing since the Middle Ages. If you think about the kind of dancing that was done back then, it was line dancing. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know about you, but in the 70s when I was, starting to hit clubs, it was disco, and disco's line dancing. And so I think it's just something, it can connect both of our heads and our bodies, and we don't have to have a partner. We can just go out and have fun, and everybody's welcome.
Mm. And it's communal.
It's communal.
Rather than having to have a partner. It's
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And one doesn't necessarily have to know the dances to join in and participate.
That's so true. And one thing that I've noticed is that sometimes the dances carry over from genre to genre. So you may have known the dances in other, venues, and then you come and you say, wow, that's familiar. I kind of know that one. And so it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that the Mavericks girls are involved in the dances. Tell us about Mavericks girls.
That's right. Well, even when she was at Kodiak Jack's, she had the Kodiak Jack's girls. She has been a dancer. My daughter has been a dancer since she was a teenager. And she's taught dance and has always loved it. And one of her goals was to have a dance team. And so that's the Mavericks girls. And they recently danced at the Red, White, and Boom in Petaluma. And they're going to be out at Wednesday Night Market next Wednesday. So if you want to check them out, you can check them out there.
What kind of dance do they do?
Country Western. They do line dance.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
And they're usually around on Saturday nights dancing at Mavericks as well.
And do they teach the line dancing? Are they all kind of involved in instruction?
Not all of them. A couple of them do. But not all of them. But they're all there, so they're all dancing anyway.
Sure. Talk about the restaurant and the bar.
The restaurant is great. They have we have a lot of specialty pizzas, and so it's pizzas that you're not going to find other places, like macaroni and cheese pizza. And
get out.
Well, what's even better is that it's made with chocolate stout.
Yes. They make the cheese sauce with the chocolate stout.
Oh, my goodness.
Slap it on a pizza
cheese
crust.
Cheese and chocolate.
Wow.
Uh-huh. And she also offers beer can chicken. That's something new on our menu just in the last few months. And I don't think that anybody else is offering it, but it's really become a big hit. Hmm. And our bar, we have 30 beers on tap, many of them local and organic. And it's just really a fun place with a lot of different flavors mm-hmm. and choices.
And you were talking about monkey bread.
Monkey bread is one of the favorites because, you know, whatever time you're wanting a snack, monkey bread, and we have both sweet and savory. The traditional monkey bread is like, you know, sticky cinnamon rolls. So,
mm-hmm. And who doesn't love that?
And who doesn't love that? Yeah.
So the restaurant is open at all hours.
It is. We're open from 5 to 2, 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. On Sundays and Mondays, currently, we're open from 5 p.m. until 11 p.m. But dinner from the whole time we're open. Mm-hmm. You can always come in and eat.
And you have a happy hour as well, correct?
We do, beginning at 5, and we have drink and appetizer specials at that time.
Do you get a lot of clientele from the hotel? What is it, the Hyatt or the Marriott that's there?
It's a Hilton.
Is it a Hilton?
I think it's a Hilton. Some. Also, she's been talking to, in Windsor, they have a Worldmark hotel.
The timeshare.
Timeshare. And so she's been talking with them about getting them, you know, supporting mm-hmm. us as well.
You've designated Tuesdays as LGBT night.
We have, and we've been having that for the year that we've been open. We actually have gotten feedback that Sunday night might be a little better. So as of August 11th, we're going to be changing our LGBT night to Sunday night. Mm. And now we have live music from 7 to 10. It's kind of a family night, and so there's no cover for that. But then we'll be doing the LGBT night after that. Mm-hmm. So that should be great.
So talk about your decision to do an LGBT night.
Well, you know, Jennifer is just very supportive of community in general. Mm-hmm. And so she really wanted to have a place where people could come and hang out and get to know each other and, you know, their own space.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Has that word spread throughout the community? Have you been getting a good response?
A reasonably good response, and I think that it's gotten bigger and bigger over time. We've had some great shows. We've had Pandora Box a couple of times, and we've really enjoyed her. We've done a benefit for the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, and that was a great hit. And since we're going to be moving to Sundays and having this more on the weekend, we are going to be offering more theme nights and more, you know, drag shows and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that should be fun.
Good. There hasn't been very many drag shows in Santa Rosa in a while.
And we can always use more drag
What's
shows.
What's that about?
I agree.
Well, you're talking here now to the official talent buyer. That is her title.
That's right.
What does the talent buyer do?
I book the bands. That's my main thing that I do at Mavericks. And so if anybody has a band and they'd like to come and play at Mavericks, they should get in touch with me because that's... I'm who they go through.
Mm. Okay.
So talk about some of the bands that have been there.
Oh, you know, one of the things that I really like about doing this at Mavericks is that I have the freedom to book whatever genre that I want. Mm-hmm. I don't really book that many country western. In fact, I've had bands come to me and say, well, we didn't even ask because we just thought you were country western because they were still thinking of us as Kodiak Jacks. And, you know, mostly the shows that have done the best for us are hip-hop and reggae. We do some, you know, cover bands and R&B. Wonder Bread 5, like I said, they were a great show. Mm-hmm. Pulsators have been there. And, you know, we just do everybody.
So it's a combination of local groups and mm-hmm. sort of touring groups?
What we've been doing mostly is having the bigger acts on Friday and then showcasing smaller, more local bands on mm-hmm. Sunday. Mm-hmm. So, and that's worked out real well. Mm-hmm. And I like being able to have, you know, the local bands that are just kind of starting out.
Right.
And
so talk about some of those local bands. Can you name a few? And
let's see. Off the top of my head, putting me on the spot. Let's see. There's one man, his name is Nate Lopez, and he plays a 8-string guitar, and he is really good.
Wow.
And then we have had, who else have we had?
So you cover the spectrum. So from like a single artist, kind of mm-hmm. singer-songwriter to a big band.
Yeah, to just whoever wants to come and play.
Wow.
Whoever wants to come and play. I really want to make a space for anybody that, you know, is starting out and can behave professionally, of course.
Right, right.
And we've had a few bands that we've had to say no more to because they don't behave themselves.
Smashing up dressing rooms and
yeah.
ordering too much caviar. And
yeah, stuff like that.
Have you thought about having some comedy nights? Or?
We did. We were for a while. We were having every month. We were having what we called a brouhaha, and it was really fun. The person who was promoting that, he went on to other things, so we haven't gotten that back. But we are definitely open to having a comedy night. Mm. Mm-hmm.
There's great nightlife in Santa Rosa.
There really is.
I mean, a lot
of
people don't realize. I mean, especially people in other parts of the county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lots of fun stuff to do.
Yeah.
How affected by the airport exchange, the freeway reconstruction are you?
Well,
affected?
As you would expect, I think that it's made it a little bit more difficult to find us. But if people are coming out there, they're going to find us. Mm-hmm. It's not that difficult. Coming from Santa Rosa, it's easiest if you take the Fulton exit because then you can just, you know, go straight and then turn left. Mm. It says on the freeway to take Shiloh, but that's just confusing. Take the Fulton exit going north.
Yes. Shiloh's too far north. You
yes.
have to backtrack.
And then you have to figure out how to get back around, and it's just confusing.
So you're very near the Sonoma County Airport, or Charles Schulz Airport, I guess it's called.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, down the road a ways. Where we're really close to is Airport Cinema. So if you go and you turn into, like you're going into the cinema is on your left, mm-hmm. and you just go back to the back of the parking lot to the last row of buildings, and that's where we're at.
Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on the importance of a venue like Mavericks being supportive of community groups, community causes, you know, whether it's the Sisters, it might be a Relay for Lifetime mm-hmm. type of event.
Yeah.
How important is it for the business part of it to really lend your support to these causes?
Well, you know, I personally believe that it's important to give back to the community. You can't, you know, giving is part of receiving, you know, that's the same coin. And we've done some really successful events. We've had one for the AIDS Foundation. We just recently did a really successful event for the MS Society. And, you know, when people approach us and they have a loved one that's in need of medical support and or some kind of, you know, that kind of thing, we really like doing those kinds of events and being able to help out and offer something back to the community in that way, too.
Mm-hmm. On a personal note, talk about the pride. I see the mother's pride when you talk about your daughter, Jennifer, and all that she's accomplished with her friends.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that she would call herself this, but she really is a visionary. And to show her dedication, she when she started the process of building Mavericks, she was pregnant. And even though my granddaughter was born in May, and they opened up in August, so she was really busy with getting the club ready to go. And, you know, the baby was with me a lot. So I'm full-time Grammy nanny for both my granddaughter and my grandson, as well as the stuff that I do with Mavericks. And you know, I'm just really proud of her. She has just done an amazing job with this club and has worked so hard and really is really invested and really wants to see this be successful, not just for her, but for everybody, you know, and her staff. She considers them her family more than just the people that work for her. And she's really dedicated and committed to them as well as the club. So it's really nice to see how well she is moving into this role of being not just a boss, but a leader.
Mm. How different is Mavericks that you know of from maybe some of the clubs that are down in actual, you know, central Santa Rosa? Is it similar, maybe a little different?
Well, you know, I like to think that it's different. But I would say that the differences lie in that Mavericks, we offer such a variety of things, you know, all genre of music. We're not really limited to any one specific image of ourselves. You know, it's like having country two nights a week and having LGBT night and having, we do karaoke on Monday nights, we do beer pong, we do, you know, all different kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So we really have, I think that we really are more diverse than some of the other clubs. and much, and really willing to be accepting of everybody.
Yeah. It's a tough business. I bet you all work really hard.
Yeah. Especially her. And you know, it's just really, it's really a pleasure to watch how hard she worked. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Is there a median age of clientele, or 20s and 30s, or does it?
It depends on the night. You know, on Thursday nights, because we do couples dancing, you know, older people tend to come for that. And on Sunday nights, because it's family night, is what we call it, and it's no cover charge, and it starts earlier. So young people come, and people can bring their kids, and my grandson is often seen there dancing on the dance floor. And so then on hip-hop nights, you know, we see, you know, 18, 20, you know, the 20-somethings, and then, you know, it just all depends on what the event. Some of our bands are older, and their fans are older. So, it's good.
Great. It's a good opportunity. So how would we find out more about Mavericks?
You can visit our website, www.mavericksantarosa.com, or our Facebook, which is Facebook and Mavericks Santa Rosa as well.
And it's Mavericks with an S.
Yes.
And S for Santa Rosa.
Yes.
So there's
two S's
there.
Two S's.
And when you get to that Facebook page, click like.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're located at 397 Aviation Boulevard.
So what have you got coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we're going to be having Wonder Bread 5 is going to be coming back. We're hoping to do some other drag shows. She hasn't told me all the stuff she's got planned, but I know that she's got some treats planned for the anniversary month. So keep checking the website, and you will be well informed.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Morning Song, thank you so much for bringing us the news about Maverick.
You're welcome.
For coming and being with us tonight here in the studios, and certainly going to look forward to the next year as Mavericks just gets bigger and bigger and certainly becomes a very popular stop.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your support.
Absolutely.
Best of luck.
We wish to thank both Morning Song tonight and Emilio Gonzalez Yanis, both just for being our guests this evening here on Outbeat Collage. Want to thank you, our listening audience, for joining us tonight. Please listen to us every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB. You can also listen to previous shows, learn all about Outbeat Radio by going to the website, which is www.outbeatradio.org. Greg Morali will be here next week with Outbeat News in Depth. Michaela, Mary, Gary.
Michaela, that's you.
That's me, isn't it? I'm reading my own name. We'll all be back on August 18th when our guests will be winemakers Dana Sabin and Larissa Stevenson from Stand Tall Wine. Also, face-to-face, Rick Dean will be here to chat about Art for Life. I'm hoping those wine folks bring some samples.
Really? Like mouthful.
Yeah.
Never get any wine here.
Thank you again, Art, to our listening audience for being with us tonight. Thanks to KRCB. Have a great week, everyone. We'll all see you next time.
Bye-bye.